for 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you every week by the Village Green Apothecary, located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. I am your host today, Dr. Kevin Passero, naturopathic doctor, and my wonderful co-host, Dana Lake, will be returning next week. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11, working hard to bring you all the latest and greatest news related to health and wellness. Today, of course, is no exception. I'm looking forward to the conversation today that we're going to be having with my special guest, Dallas Kluatra, who we've had on before. He's got a very impressive resume and very impressive education. He's really a great source of information. And some of the things we're going to be discussing are some of the most popular nutrients specific for blood sugar sensitivity, improving glucose response, including improving insulin response in the body. And this is, of course, as many people know, a major issue. You know, I deal with this pretty much every day in my office. Of course, we know that the rates of type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance are skyrocketing in this country because of the obesity and weight epidemic that many people are dealing with. But aside from that, if you don't have a diagnosis of diabetes, there's also a huge incidence of metabolic syndrome, which is a condition that is sort of like a pre-diabetes, where you see certain patterns like elevated blood sugar, elevated triglycerides, elevated cholesterol, sometimes elevated blood pressure, sometimes elevated liver enzymes. And it really is a very common trend that you see in people that are, you typically have an increased body mass index, and they may not be diabetic, but can significantly benefit from getting their insulin sensitivity improved and their glucose levels under control. In addition, there's a whole other category of people that don't even fall into the metabolic syndrome category. They don't fall into the diabetic category, and they really don't even fit into the pre-diabetes category. But if you're an astute doctor or physician or practitioner who really looks at lab numbers, history, diet, body mass index in great detail, you can understand that that person's body is suffering from some aspect of glucose or insulin sensitivity before it's actually really showing up as an abnormal value. And the reason why this is important is because we know that insensitivity to insulin, or degrees and levels of insulin resistance, coupled with minor elevations, yes, even minor elevations in glucose levels in the blood, can be very damaging to the body and to the system. This is, you know, the most extreme example of this is what happens when blood sugar levels are chronically elevated to an extreme degree in people on an ongoing basis. Well, that's the problem with uncontrolled diabetes. And there are certain cells in the body, particularly the cells in the retina of the eye, the cells in the kidneys, the cells in the cardiovascular system, particularly in the arteries, that are very susceptible to damage from elevated glucose in the blood. And that is why people who suffer from uncontrolled diabetes typically end up with a very high risk of heart disease. They typically can end up with a high risk for blindness, kidney disease and kidney damage, needing at the end stage necessitating dialysis because of the damaging effects of the sugar on the kidney cells. And then, of course, the unfortunate consequence of needing limb amputation or digit amputation because the microvasculature of the small branched arteries get damaged by the sugar. Now, of course, that's the end stage, a most extreme example, but even mild insulin resistance and mild elevations in blood sugar chronically can have devastating long-term effects on the overall health and functioning of our body and of our system. And that is why it's important to look at some nutrients. Now, somebody who has a full-blown case of extreme diabetes, they're not going to be able to control that just by taking some supplements or some herbs. They're going to need some pretty intensive interventions. But there are many people out there who fit the population demographics that are dealing with some degree of insulin resistance that could get significant benefit where they don't need a medication yet. They may just need some lifestyle changes, some diet, some exercise to get their body mass index down. You couple that with some of the herbs and formulas and nutrients that we're going to talk about today, and all of a sudden, we've completely changed the picture. There are some lab tests that are worth discussing with your doctor if you're concerned possibly about this. You know, most doctors on a screening physical will look at the fasting blood sugar. So they tell you to eat dinner, after dinner drink nothing but water, and first thing in the morning, no water, you know, no coffee, no juice, no food, just keep drinking water, go to the lab and get your blood drawn. That's the fasting glucose level. If that level is under 100, and some doctors push that limit all the way up to 110 or 120, they feel that you are in the quote-unquote normal range. The low end of the range is, of course, 60, and, you know, we don't want to be on either end of that spectrum. You want to be in a healthy middle zone of that range, typically somewhere between 80 and 85. That's a healthy fasting blood sugar. That means that your body is having a good response to insulin, that your body is able to control the sugar and insulin responses quite well, and that you're not having periods of time where insulin is spiking too high. Now, that is a one snapshot in time, first morning fasting blood glucose. There are many people that have normal fasting blood glucose levels. However, their body is not managing sugar at other times of the day. For example, when they eat a meal that's high in carbohydrates or a meal that's high in sugar, where you all of a sudden get a sharp spike of sugar into the bloodstream, and it's now up to insulin to help lower those blood sugar levels to get them back down to a normal place. Well, those people... It's deceiving to look at their lab work because you may not suspect that there's any sugar regulation problems going on. So there is a better test called the hemoglobin A1C. This is a test that measures the effect of sugar on the red blood cell membrane. Our red blood cells have a 3-month lifespan, so basically it's an average of how much sugar has been interacting with that red blood cell membrane over the course of 3 months. And if we see borderline elevated or elevated hemoglobin A1C levels and normal fasting blood glucose levels, the value or what's going on with the hemoglobin A1C always trumps the fasting glucose, because that is a better long-term average of looking at what's been happening after every meal, after every piece of cake, after every piece of bread, after every well-balanced meal, how the blood sugar is going up and how effectively and how quickly the body is getting that blood sugar back under control. And in my opinion, it's a test that every single physician should be running on their patients on annual physicals and screenings for people that are middle-aged or potentially, you know, as a general screening, it is way more valuable than looking at just the fasting glucose and gives us a much better idea. So if your doctor hasn't done that test for you, have it done, because you may be surprised, and many people are, that their fasting blood sugars are totally normal. Their hemoglobin A1Cs are on the high end of normal or slightly elevated, and it clearly shows that that increases your risk for developing diabetes down the road. So that would be a great time to start thinking about nutrient interventions, food, exercise, lifestyle, and potentially selecting some of the nutrients and herbs we're going to be talking about today to help your body regain that insulin sensitivity and start reducing your risk factors for problems. What people don't understand is that increased levels of glucose and insulin aren't just about damaging your kidneys and your eyes and your blood vessels. Although those effects are devastating, we know a lot more about how these hormones and elevated blood sugar levels affect our physiology in general. For example, there is very clear correlation between chronically elevated insulin levels and increased rates of certain types of cancer. There's also very clear correlation between insulin levels and high insulin levels and inflammation, which plagues many people in our population. Arthritis, inflammation is the root of most incidences of heart disease. It can be the root of certain types of cancer. And if you look at what is plaguing the health of Americans, the top two conditions are heart disease and cancer. Those are the two number one killer of Americans at this time in our country and in our history. So it's very important to look at the factors that contribute to heart disease and cancer, and certainly insulin or inflammation is one of them, and insulin relates to that. So these issues span many, many different health problems and are certainly something that we need to look at. Now, just as a side note, before we get into sort of the depth of this, I always like to discuss sometimes things that are trending in the news related to health. And of course, right now, probably one of the most popular things trending is what's been going on with a very active early flu season and the fact that many people are suffering from the flu, and it's happening at a much earlier time in flu season than typically occurs. seems to be a relatively severe outbreak of what some people are describing as not a super severe flu. There's a lot of debate going on about the vaccine, and you know, the information is spotty and sketchy. I'm not here to promote it one way or another. Certainly health officials will say that getting vaccines and getting vaccinated is an incredibly important part of public health, and there is truth to that, to instill what's called sort of herd or community immunity to reduce the spread and the incidence of the virus and of the flu in large populations. But what we're seeing is about a 50% effectiveness of the vaccine in this strain of flu, particularly the type of strain of flu that we're seeing that's a little bit more devastating, which of course is not great numbers to convince people to go out and get vaccinated, but it's interesting to see how it plays out. I think the other interesting trend, and this is again not something that specifically speaks for or against the flu vaccine, is new data that sort of suggests that the matching of the vaccine to the flu virus is a good bet on what's going to be protective. For example, the type A influenza right now is the one that seems to be more devastating, creating more hospitalizations and more severe illness. Well, in this year's flu vaccine, the type A match is actually quite good, and it's what you heard about the media hyping before flu season started, that we actually have a good vaccine this year. But it turns out a good match is not equaling good protection. Now, you look at the type B influenza that's going around, which it does not seem to be quite as severe presentation, and the type B match within the flu vaccine is actually a very poor match for the type B influenza going around. However, the protection from the flu vaccination seems to be much better for the type B. So, you know, there's this new research emerging, and many of the doctors who work on specialize in researching the flu and flu vaccines are re-looking at how do we create an effective vaccine. Maybe it's not so much based on just matching. Now, whether or not you choose to take the flu vaccine or not is a personal decision for most people, and I will leave that up to them. I'm not here to push it either way, but I just want to remind people that there are other things to pay attention to. Of course, getting good quality rest, washing your hands, staying home if you're sick, all of the basic things that you hear over and over again. We certainly know that supporting your immune system by adequate intake of vitamin D seems to reduce how viruses affect our body, whether that be a flu virus or a cold virus. So making sure that your daily intake of D for adults can safely be up to 4,000 IUs a day, even without blood testing, the ideal is to have your doctor check your vitamin D levels, and if your levels are low, make sure to get them up. We seem to see the most amount of protection around when vitamin D levels are somewhere between 45 to 65 nanograms per deciliter. So getting, if your levels are much below that, you may benefit from a 5 to 6,000 IU dose of vitamin D daily to help support your immune system and get your levels up a bit more aggressively. Also, a few weeks ago, I interviewed on my radio show somebody from the company Boryon, who makes the acylococcinum, which is a homeopathic remedy designed to deal with flu-like symptoms. They have had many double-blind clinical trials, placebo-controlled trials, on how their product affects symptoms related to the flu, and the outcomes are statistically significantly positive in favor of using acylococcinum. So I recommend, or how they call it, Acillo, going to any drugstore. The Village Green definitely has it and is a great resource for listeners, and having your acylococcinum remedies on hand. At the very first sign of flu, of course, you can call your doctor, and it's not a bad time to get started on flu antivirals like Tamiflu, but also start taking your Acillo at the recommended dose, one vial every 2 hours. Again, very well carried out human clinical trials have showed that that significantly reduces the severity and symptoms associated with flu-like symptoms. So some basic things to have on hand: staying well hydrated, getting plenty of rest. If you have to travel, and the holiday season is a bit over, but people still do a lot of travel, everybody's worried about being in the plane and their exposure to viruses while on the plane, whereas we've talked to some of my guests in the past who have looked into this data a little bit more carefully, the air on the plane is not that much more dense with viruses and bacteria than the normal air we breathe. One of the biggest problems with air travel has to do with the dehydration that occurs from the dry air and the recirculated air in the plane. So your mucous membranes in your nose get very dry and in your mouth get drier. And when they're drier and less mucus, you're more susceptible to a virus or a bacteria setting up camp there and basically invading that mucous membrane and thriving. So one of the best things you can do if air travel is necessary is to stay very well hydrated. Start hydrating the day prior. Make sure you hydrate very well on the flight and on the day of flying, and make sure you hydrate well the day after to prevent your mucous membranes from getting dried out or being more susceptible to an infection or, you know, susceptible to a virus setting up camp there. So just some interesting news on the flu. You know, there's not much you can do per se to 100% avoid it, whether you take the vaccine, whether you don't, whether you stay inside, whether you wash your hands, but there are things you can do to reduce your risk. And because this year's flu season seems to be getting off to a very aggressive start, and the peaks for typically for flu season last about 3 months, I would certainly suggest that people do everything they can to stay healthy, whether that be being vaccinated, staying hydrated, taking your vitamin D and other immune support supplements. Is certainly a way to help ensure some level of immunity and possible protection. So when we come back from the break, we're going to be getting into the intro here that I discussed, and we're going to be talking about very specific herbs and nutrients that really are leading the cutting edge in research in the natural world for their ability to help with blood sugar stabilization, insulin sensitivity, and managing the aspects related to those conditions. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. Brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, and we're going to be back in just a minute.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acidophilus, 900% more. Get acidophilus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acidophilus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Are you under a lot of stress at work? Pressure from the boss, budget cuts, impossible workloads? It can all take a serious toll on your health, but we can help. Village Green Apothecary has everything you need for a healthier lifestyle, a wide range of nutritional supplements, health-related books, and more. We've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living resources for 45 years, and we'll take the time to advise you about your unique needs. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you every week by the Village Green Apothecary, located here in Bethesda, Maryland. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero, naturopathic doctor, and my wonderful co-host Dana Lake will be returning next week. So please remember to tune in every Sunday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. If you have trouble actually tuning in to every show, what you can always do is go to the Village Green website, www.myvillagegreen.com, and on the right-hand side of the homepage, there is a microphone icon. If you click on that, it will take you to the archive show section where you can download and listen to for absolutely free every show we have done over the past 5 years. It is, of course, a wonderful resource to learn about different aspects of health and wellness, and we hope that you all get a great education by tuning in and listening to us every Sunday. So I'd love to get into our main topic for today around blood sugar, glucose, and insulin. So I'm going to introduce my special guest. Dallas Kluatra, PhD, earned his AB from Stanford University and his PhD from the prestigious University of California at Berkeley. A fellow of the American College of Nutrition, he is a prominent industry consultant and a published author, as well as a principal in Glycon Technologies Group, LLC, an intellectual property holding company. He is an associate editor of Total Health Magazine and a member of the editorial advisory board on Nutritional Outlook Magazine and recent patents on cardiovascular drug discovery. He is the author of numerous books. Recent publications include Grapeseed Extract in the Encyclopedia of Dietary Supplements, Tocotrienols and Vitamin E, Hype or Science, and Vitamin E Natural versus Synthetic in the book Tocotrienols, Vitamin E Beyond Tocopherols. Kavakava, Examining New Reports of Toxicity and Toxicology Letters, and Anti-Fat Nutrients, 4th Edition. Dr. Kluatra's primary research interests are the components of the metabolic syndrome, Syndrome X, which we talked about at the beginning of the show, so we really could not ask for a better, more well-educated special guest for today's show. Dr. Kluatra, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always nice to...
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to share with our listeners in the break, we were discussing what to discuss in this segment to start off with, and you had an excellent idea to introduce this idea that some of the damaging effects on the body related to blood sugar problems aren't necessarily just related to blood sugar. So I'd love for you to elaborate on that and help people understand how powerful in both ways, good and bad, this insulin hormone or this hormone insulin can be.
Okay, now this is sort of a nice tie-in to your discussion of the flu vaccine. The science advances, but it doesn't always advance in a straight line. So, as with the flu vaccines, sometimes not what we think we know turns out not to be. There was evidence, but it wasn't quite as true as we thought. And a lot of what has gone on with diabetes research, in fact, is very similar. A few decades ago, I guess the great drug of choice was the sulfonylureas, and the idea here was, well, wow, this stuff really reduces blood sugar levels. What the sulfonylureas do primarily is cause a release of insulin, cause a great release of insulin. You drop the blood sugar, and everyone thought, well, blood sugar is the only real problem here, and we use the sulfonylureas. Everything is going to be great. We'll drop the cardiovascular disease. We'll drop the various other types of problems. Turned out that very oddly, it was a big surprise to all the researchers, that you did not have the improvements that people expected. Yes, the blood sugars were low, but you weren't improving all these aspects of the metabolic syndrome that everyone thought you were going to improve simply by lowering the blood sugars. The reason turns out to be that insulin itself is a major, in fact, perhaps the primary actor in these conditions. And a good way of thinking about this, Gerald Reven at Stanford University has a name that is associated with the metabolic syndrome. He's done a huge amount of work on this. Now, he's not the first one to have located this sort of axis of insulin and metabolic syndrome conditions, but he's the one who's popularized it. People recognize this actually going back into the 19th century. One of the types of research that they've undertaken is to look at individuals who, for all practical intents and purposes, appear to be in great health. No blood lipids issues, no blood sugar problems, and yet if you look at their insulin levels, you can do an insulin tolerance, an insulin test, and see how much insulin is required, for example, to dispose of a particular amount of glucose. what they found is about 35% of the population at large actually has insulin levels that are high enough to put them at risk for the metabolic syndrome. And these are individuals that, under all standard tests, will be not only healthy, but in great shape. Okay, and so it turns out that insulin was the actor here. And there's several reasons for this. One, you mentioned inflammation. Insulin, in an individual who is not insulin resistant, insulin is actually an anti-inflammatory. It reduces inflammatory responses. But if you are insulin resistant, you have exactly the opposite effect. It increases inflammatory responses. Again, if you look at the development of plaques and the arteries, it turns out that you can correlate active plaque in the artery directly with insulin spikes. So there's a Swedish group that went through and looked at blood parameters and actual heart attacks. What correlates really with the heart attack? And it turned out not to be the various blood lipid markers that were significant. What was significant, you could track it in time. What was significant is the beginning of insulin spikes. And those were what were very tightly related to the unstable plaque that then leads on to the actual cardiovascular incidents. Okay, so this is and there are lots of reasons for this. One, because insulin tends to promote the proliferation of smooth muscle in the artery, and so if you have damage in the artery, you're promoting this development of all this smooth muscle around it. Of course, then you have development of plaque. So insulin, it turns out to be a major factor in all this. And so if you look at blood sugar regulation, you can't just look at improving insulin release, which a lot of people do. It's something that you have to pay attention to. But nevertheless, it's not the only component of the picture. And so, science does advance. It just doesn't necessarily advance in a straight line.
Sure, and I mean, it's a great point because we do know that about 50% of people that have a cardiovascular event, like a heart attack, have normal or low lipid levels. So what else is going on? You know, we've been learning over the last 10, 15, 20 years that the story of, you know, high cholesterol equals heart disease, this 1+1=2 equation, it's a lot more complicated than that. And there are some people that have very high lipid levels that actually never develop cardiovascular disease, and other people with normal or low lipid levels that seem to develop cardiovascular disease very severely, even early on. And so there are many factors that possibly contribute to that. And certainly, you know, based on the data, you know, you're referencing, it is possible that the insulin and insulin resistance or increased spikes in insulin output are part of that.
If there's a concept known as metabolic flexibility or metabolic plasticity, and the focus of this is how well can the body shift from fuel sources. We are omnivores, which means we eat a variety of foods. We're not stuck eating just plant foods. We're not stuck just eating animal-based foods. We can eat a variety of protein levels and still, not just survive, but thrive. But this depends upon our being able to readily shift from using one source of energy to another source of energy. And the problem that arises is that a lot of our habits tend to impinge upon this metabolic plasticity. How easily and how quickly can you shift? And this is what plays into what you were talking about in the beginning, the introductory segment of the show, postprandial, the after the meal insulin spikes. Why is it you get these insulin spikes? And blood sugar spikes. Okay? And of course, as the diabetics in your audience are probably already well aware of, if you have a blood glucose excursion, one of these big spikes where you are popping up at around 200, it's very difficult afterwards to get this back down and under control. It may take you a week or more to get back into regulation. Somehow this spike that tends to really cause the issue. Well, even with those who don't have diabetes, those people who are in the pre-diabetes category, these What you're seeing is that there's a lot more damage from these spikes than is normally recognized, because it's the spike that gives you all the pro-oxidants, the free radical damage in the artery lining, for example. That's where you're really setting off the oxidative damage, the glycosylation of the proteins and the damage to the lipid membranes. And so what you really need to look for in your diet is what can you do to control this. And it's not a matter, I mean, American research tends to look at the big three nutrients, proteins, fats, carbohydrates. Unfortunately, an awful lot is hidden there because not all proteins are the same. Protein from beef, your body reacts to differently than protein from, say, fish. Protein from beef is actually a very powerful gluconeogenic. Those who are diabetic may have been told by their diabetes educator that if you eat a steak, you'll have to take X additional units of insulin because you're going to churn out all of this additional glucose in your own system because it's beef. Or there's actually research now looking at the branched-chain amino acids, and there's a lot of debate as to what role branched-chain amino acids, which are much more prevalent in red meat than in fish and chicken, what role do the branched-chain amino acids play? Because it turns out that even though branched-chain amino acids on the one hand increase insulin release in response to carbohydrate, which all the athletes think is great, well, maybe yes, maybe no, it turns out that our livers, you touched on this issue, I think, of the liver and diabetes. Well, it turns out the liver can't control properly for the intake of branched-chain amino acids, and an excess over time disrupts the ability of the liver to control how much glucose it releases.
Hmm.
So the world is a little bit different than just how much protein, how much fat, how much carbohydrate.
Sure.
Or again, you can take a lot of these plant compounds, the pigments in, say, grapes or blueberries and things like this, actually reduce the reactivity to sugar. So if you don't tend to get a blood sugar spike for the same amount of carbohydrate if you're eating a lot of these anthocyanins, these highly pigmented flavonoids.
Well, very interesting points, Dr. Kulatra, and I'm glad you shared them with us because I think it is important to stay on top of what's emerging in this field of research around metabolic syndrome. It is, in my opinion, incredibly ignored in the traditional medical field. Doctors are only really drawing attention to the problems associated with glucose, blood sugar, and insulin after it is already a major problem. There are very few doctors who are looking very, in advance, trying to prevent or looking really into a person's health history and lab work in detail in an attempt to try and understand the aspect of prevention and where that person is right now and how simple tools and modulation of different factors can have a significant impact on their overall health in the future if we get it under control now. There seems to be this idea that no damage or no problems can possibly be occurring until the lab numbers are so clinically out of balance that there is overt disease. And, you know, I think what we're learning based on what you're talking about and when you look at the trends of health in our country is that there are probably many steps of intervention that can be done way before overt disease is discovered that can significantly help people feel better. And also what we've discussed is some people never make it to overt disease, but from a standpoint of blood sugar dysregulation like diabetes or metabolic syndrome, but they may make it to overt disease with heart disease. And could something have been done looking at the insulin blood sugar access or piece of the puzzle that could have prevented their development of heart disease? And I think that the answer is in many cases yes. And I'm glad that you shared that with us, and I want people to be thinking about that. So when they have their annual checkup and their fasting blood sugars look normal and maybe even their hemoglobin A1C looks normal, they're still asking the questions and looking at the nutritional factors that improve the insulin glucose balance. So when we come back from the break, Dr. Kulatra, I'd like to get into some of the specific nutrients that we see be helpful for people who are looking to the natural pharmacy to try and improve how this insulin glucose relationship plays out in their own body. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. by the Village Green Apothecary, and we're going to be back right after this break.
Mega Food Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Mega Food believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Mega Food, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body, and this is where GeroFormula's NeuroOptimizer comes to the rescue. NeuroOptimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. NeuroOptimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. NeuroOptimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. by the Village Green Apothecary, located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. They have been a staple of health and wellness in this community for over 40 years. So if you've never visited the store before, please do. It's a pleasure being with you all today. We're having a very interesting discussion, basically relating to cutting-edge research and science as it relates to the two, you know, number one and number two things that kill Americans these days, which has to do with heart disease, which we've discussed, even relating to cancer, which is the number two or sometimes number one leading cause of death in the United States. These are the conditions that plague most Americans. These are the reasons that people end up hospitalized, on medication, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, cancer. These are the main issues facing our culture today. And this radio show and the concepts in this radio show, in my opinion, really get to the root, one of the primary roots that's feeding the extreme amount of disease and poor health in this country today. So I have on the phone with me Dr. Dallas Cluatra, a PhD. He's earned his degrees from very prestigious universities, Stanford and University of California at Berkeley. He's been active in the natural health field and nutritional science field for a very long time. And in this segment, Dr. Cluatra, I think you wanted to finish up some discussions about some of the effects of insulin and then start talking about some of the specific nutrients that we can get from the natural pharmacy that seem to be useful in helping our bodies get a better handle on this glucose-insulin balance scenario.
Yes. What I wanted to tie back to is the issues of microcirculation that you brought up in your earlier segment and the liver again, that because elevated insulin levels alter microcirculation, especially to the brain. It's a classic that high levels of insulin in the peripheral lead to low levels of insulin in the brain itself, and this odd topsy-turvy type world, and that's because of the microcirculation issue. And then the liver, that having more insulin, well, you have an insulin sensitivity to the liver. The liver doesn't function quite properly in controlling blood sugar. What this means in terms of sort of nutrients, herbs and nutrients you're going to look at as being most supportive, is that you really need to start with items that don't elevate insulin. What you want are items that are referred to as insulin mimetic. They act like insulin, and insulin sensitizing. They help your body respond more readily to the insulin that it's releasing. I think the classic most people have heard of is chromium. Okay, chromium compounds work primarily by improving how well your body responds to insulin as opposed to releasing more insulin. Okay, and for those who are chromium deficient, of course, these chromium compounds have a lot of benefit. One of the classic minerals that you find people who have blood sugar issues deficiency is magnesium. And since we Americans are famous for not particularly liking green vegetables are our primary source of magnesium. Magnesium is one of those items that plays a role in helping your body respond properly to the insulin it's already releasing. Again, some of the vitamins like B6 and biotin. Biotin is very important here, hence insulin sensitivity. And biotin is involved, one of the primary pathways for getting blood glucose into the energy-producing cycles of the cell. Herbally, probably the most interesting item to come out recently is wild bitter melon. Okay. There's particularly an item which is near and dear to my heart because I was involved in the research on it, an item called glycostat, which is a wild bitter melon produced in a particular fashion. The reason that the wild bitter melon is significant is that it plays both these roles of acting as an insulin mimetic and as insulin sensitizer. In the trials, we did a bunch of animal research both in India and at Georgetown University Medical Center here in the United States, and found that the wild bitter melon without increasing insulin levels was able to support more rapid clearance of glucose from the blood, and this without causing excessively low blood sugar levels. Now this is very important. It's nice to clear the blood glucose, but you don't want to drop, as you pointed out. There is a lower threshold there of 60 on the point scale that you don't want to get to. And most of us, if we drop much below, if you rapidly drop from, say, the 80s down to 60, you're going to know this, and not necessarily a good way. So you want to. So items that improve your handling of blood glucose without elevating the insulin and without making you hypoglycemic or low blood sugar level are items you want to really focus on. It's interesting, we're talking about the liver, that these bitter melon is classically known as a liver tonic. Okay, so there's some influence there via the effect upon the liver. And by the way, even though it's people don't normally think of it this way. I think the milk thistle extracts, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the milk thistle extracts are also known for improving blood sugar response. And this, I think, is primarily via the liver. So there are a number of areas that you look at first. Oh, and I shouldn't leave out alpha-lipoic acid for sort of a classic here. It improves the reactivity of what are called the glucose transports in the cell. But lipoic acid, oddly enough, again, something that's typically used to support liver function, powerful, powerful antioxidants, that the first place you want to start in any program is with those items that support insulin's own actions without elevating the insulin levels. That's the first place you start.
And that certainly makes sense based on some of the emerging research. And, you know, it's interesting, at the beginning of the segment you talked about, and, I mean, you can reiterate this. So are you saying that research shows that when peripheral insulin levels are elevated, so in somebody that has a insulin resistance type scenario where their body is releasing more insulin either in response to poor dietary choices, foods that are very high in sugar and have very high glycemic index, or over time they've developed insulin resistance, you actually see a decreased insulin concentration in the brain? Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, this has been shown fairly decisively with a compound called diazoxide, which was typically used with people who have tumors that cause on the pancreas, that cause an elevated release of insulin. So you're trying to control this with this compound. But what they discovered is that even relatively minor elevations of insulin reduce the microcirculation in the brain, the amount of blood crossing the blood-brain barrier. And what happens then is that even though you're releasing a whole lot of insulin into the blood circulation, not very much is getting into the brain. And since it's the insulin that, and keep in mind what insulin does in the brain, it actually allows, since the brain, which is what part of the total body weight, yet uses 20% of all the glucose in the system. And you have to keep in mind that that our brain is really the voracious consumer of glucose in the body. What happens if you don't have enough insulin in the brain itself, the cells in the brain, the various tissues in the brain, are not taking up the glucose. It's not driving the reactions that are energy-dependent in the brain. And so a lot of these, for example, the delay in responding to a meal in someone who's been overweight for a long period of time, or in diabetics, typically in diabetics, is that because you're not getting the energy-driven reactions in the brain that depend upon that insulin that you're releasing for the meal, you don't get, for example, the creation of the compounds in the hypothalamus, which are supposedly going to tell you that that your hunger is being satisfied. You have a big delay. You typically have a delay of say 10 minutes compared to a lean individual, a person who is overweight. They have a delay of 10 minutes in getting this hunger signal, this satiety signal in the brain, precisely because you're not driving these reactions that are energy dependent. It's dependent upon that glucose getting into these cells and giving that signal.
Yeah, well,
it's all energy dependent.
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept, especially because there have been some preliminary trials. I know it's the very early phase of research in working with, I believe it's Alzheimer's disease and dementia, where they're actually using nasal insulin sprays to try and increase insulin levels in the brain. And preliminary results are actually showing some very positive outcomes. And it certainly is interesting if you think about a percentage of people that have sort of a poor body mass index and are likely dealing with elevated insulin levels in the periphery, and how, you know, and the extremely high rates of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and cognitive decline that seems to be pervading our people in the elderly population. It's up to, I think, 1 in 4 people over the age of 65 are going to have some type of cognitive decline. You know, it's very interesting that using insulin as a therapy to help that is actually showing some interesting results. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Kulatra?
Yes. Well, of course, the nasal spray insulin, since you have only that very thin membrane between the nasal cavities and the brain, the idea of, this ties directly into this microcirculation of the brain, because after all, you're bypassing the poor circulation from your own body by going through this thin membrane to get the insulin into the brain. And yes, I mean, a lot of I think that what you see with a lot of the research of the beta amyloid and fibrils and so forth and in the Alzheimer's and in a lot of these issues having to do with other types of dementia really seems to be an energy deficiency state. Because keep in mind, when people talk about the buildup of beta amyloid in Alzheimer's, we have perfectly good systems for clearing this from the brain. We use beta amyloid all the time to create memories. It's sort of bizarre here. It's one of those weird paradoxes that keep on, you know, popping up in physiology. In fact, we use a lot of these constructs that are viewed as being damaging in Alzheimer's. In fact, we use to create memory. It's the lack of regulation, the lack of ability to clear these after they've been used, that turns out to be the problem.
Very interesting. You know, I mean, we are all scratching our heads, and the scientific community is, you know, really starting to wonder why these things are so prevalent. And it's interesting to start, you know, looking at some of these things that are really lifestyle related, and it's not just about addressing it when it happens, but really understanding the process that's going on for years and years before something like this develops. So we're going to have to take a quick break. Dr. Kolatra, thank you very much. We're excited to have you back for our last segment. We're going to continue this conversation. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, and we're going to be back in just a minute.
The moment you feel achy or run down, nip flu-like symptoms in the bud with Boron's Acylococcinum. Clinical studies show that Acylo, when taken at first signs of flu, reduces the duration and severity of flu-like symptoms such as headache, body aches, chills, and fever. For 65 years, families throughout the world have relied on Acylo. It works safely and naturally without causing side effects like drowsiness or interacting with other medications. Keep Acylo on hand and feel like yourself again. Acylo is available at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Acylo on the web at acylo.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. That's right, raw. Made with the highest quality standards to preserve raw nutrients, uncooked, untreated, unadulterated. They are binder-free with no fructose, maltodextrin, magnesium stearate, or cornstarch. With live enzymes and probiotics, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Wondering how to turn your bedroom into a hothouse? The answer is Hot Plants, the natural herbal way to make sex fun, vibrant, and satisfying. Two unique formulas, one for him and one for her, were developed by Chris Kilham, the medicine hunter. Chris's book, Hot Plants, features these exciting products from enzymatic therapy. Hot Plants, from the science of enzymatic therapy, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Some things are hard to stomach, and life doesn't stop for occasional immune challenges or intestinal distress. Probalarti from Metagenics offers a new targeted probiotic approach for intestinal support. Help maintain control while traveling or as a follow-up to antibiotic therapy to support intestinal flora for healthy intestinal function. Probalarti provides ID-certified probiotic strains suggested by research to enhance certain aspects of immune function in addition to promoting a healthy balance of intestinal microflora. Probalarti is the go-to probiotic for patients on the go. Get it today. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., so please tune in with us. We're always eager and happy to be here bringing you great information related to health and wellness. We're wrapping up the conversation today around blood sugar and insulin, and I feel like we've learned a lot. I've certainly learned a lot, and I hope that you all have learned a lot. I have on the phone with me my special guest, Dr. Dallas Kolatra, who's been discussing with us some of these key issues around insulin and blood sugar regulation. In this last segment, we're going to just sort of round out our conversation about some of the different nutrients from the natural pharmacy that help the body to regulate insulin and blood sugar levels. So, Dr. Kolatra, I think you had some final thoughts or some other product, herbs and things from the natural pharmacy you wanted to mention and discuss.
Yes. Well, I was thinking that that really, first of all, most of us don't want to take a handful of supplements to do one thing. We'd like to actually just have a comprehensive formula so we can just take one supplement that's already been well balanced to do things and to support, for example, you know, blood glucose and insulin regulation. The some of the classic herbs that have been used to help with blood sugar regulation, things like Genimal Silvestre, and which is probably one of the best known of the items. The Genimal Silvestre helps protect the beta cells and the islets of that Langerhans. So it has a lot of functions. One of which is really it's protect these cells because it's difficult to regenerate these once you've damaged them. So
and these,
like
just to be clear, those are the cells in your pancreas that actually produce insulin.
They're the ones that actually produce insulin. So you want to keep the ones you've got. You don't want to be on that list of, I want a transplant. I don't think so. You want to keep the ones you already have. Relatively well known, I think, is the banaba leaf, which is quite complex. In fact, there are a number of active ingredients. Carosolic acid may be the best known, but there are a number of other items, some of them which are classically known as tannins, in this that are important. And eucalyptus leaf, another item that I don't think most of us think of eucalyptus for the aroma, and for, say, colds, but in fact there are compounds in eucalyptus leaf that are protective against glycation. We're talking about damage to protein, damage to the lipid membrane, the fat membrane of cells, because you have too much sugar in the blood. It causes all these oxidative reactions that just damage the membranes of your cells. Okay, the eucalyptus leaf has compounds that are both protective against glycation and, again, help regulate how your body deals with blood sugar. And it's nice that there are some formulas out there. One that I'm familiar with is Jarl Formula's Glucose Optimizer. It's nice that there's formulas out there that have gone to the trouble of pulling together the lipoic acid, the chromium, the banaba, the Genimal Silvestre. In fact, Jarl Formula's Glucose Optimizer might be one of the only ones that right now has the glycosid bittermelon, wild bittermelon available. Okay, so I think most of us would like to see a comprehensive formula, something that supports a variety of these mechanisms that your body uses, because after all, we are designed to deal with an ever-changing world, okay, which means you have a whole variety of mechanisms in the body, and it's nice to sort of protect a variety of these at once, as opposed to just trying to deal with one pathway only, because the body, Mother Nature tends to outsmart us if you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and certainly from a botanical medicine standpoint, I know in my training it was always clear that herbs have powerful action by themselves, but a lot of times the synergistic action of multiple different herbal compounds are far greater than the effects of one or any of them just by themselves. So creating a formula that takes into account this aspect of synergy and supporting glucose and insulin regulation from multiple different pathways in the body certainly provides a great approach for dealing with insulin sensitivity and glucose management. And, you know, I mean, people who are interested, certainly diet and lifestyle and the food choices that you make are really, you know, the conversation we haven't discussed today, but are clearly the most critical issue. For many people, if they're not already engaged in a diet program that takes these factors into consideration and doing exercise to get themselves to an ideal body mass, taking a supplement isn't going to fix everything. This all needs to be done in the context of understanding these ways that your body works. And although supplements are powerful tools, you have to understand that food is one of the most powerful physiological tools that you put in your body every day, multiple times a day, and the effects of what you're eating have to be considered when you're looking at your overall health. So, Dr. Kolhatra, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today. As always, it is a pleasure to have you with us sharing your knowledge and expertise.
Always good to be here.
All right, everybody, that wraps it up. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully you learned as much as I did and are eager to tune in to our next show next Sunday at 10 a.m. with my co-host Dana Lake. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, wishing you all the best of health.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health. and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.